Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1779 that an American composer, attorney, poet, and social worker who wrote a poem called Defense of Fort McHenry was born. The words of this poem became the lyrics to what song? Was it A, the Star-Spangled Banner, B, America the Beautiful, C, American Pie, D, Stars and Stripes Forever, or E, God Bless America? The poem, Defense of Fort McHenry, became the lyrics to which of those songs? And question number two, it was on this day in 1962 that Bob Dylan changed his name from what? Was it A, Robert Zimmerman, B, Bart Simpson, C, Bobby Freeland, or D, Dylan Thomas? So what was Bob Dylan's name before he legally changed it today in 1962? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. And in transitions, we have this article titled, Ozzy Osbourne Made Poignant Instagram Post the Day Before His Death. This is written by Daniel Trainer on July 22, 2025, in Us magazine. Osbourne shared a behind-the-scenes photo from Black Sabbath's Back to the Beginning show via Instagram on Monday, July 21. The picture showed the outside of Osbourne's dressing room where the concert was held on July 5th, the final show. The poster read, featuring a photo of Osbourne and his Black Sabbath bandmates, Osbourne's last Instagram post has become a place for fans to congregate and eulogize the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. The legendary rocker died on Tuesday, July 22. He was 76 years old. Osbourne was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2020 and has faced other health struggles in recent years. His final concert raised money for Children's Hospitals and the Cure Parkinson's charity. In addition to Osbourne and Black Sabbath, the show boasted performances from Ozzy superfans like Jack Black, Alice in Chains, Guns N' Roses, and Slayer. Mozart's Piano Sonata No. 11 in A introduces our classical music news. Here's a side to Mozart you probably didn't know. Why Mozart joined The Freemasons. This is written by Terry Blaine in July 19, 2025, BBC Music Magazine. On 14 December 1784, a rather special initiation ceremony took place at the Masonic Lodge known as Beneficence in Vienna. The new initiate was none other than the 28-year-old Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, who had settled in the Imperial City 3 years previously to advance his musical reputation further. Before long, he had established himself as the finest keyboard player in Vienna and scored a significant success with his opera, The Abduction from the Siagilio. So, why did Mozart want to become a Mason? Why add the numerous commitments involved in membership, meetings, lectures, dinners, charitable events, to his already hectic swirl of social and professional activities? Undoubtedly, there were opportunities for what we nowadays call networking. Many of Austria's governing class were Masons, 80% by one estimate, and the well-connected movers and shakers Mozart's encountered in Masonic functions could undoubtedly assist his career aspirations. Connections matter. But a much stronger reason for Mozart's attraction to Freemasonry was the philosophy that it promoted. For the German writer Gotthold Lessing, this involved a brotherly love. All Masons in Mozart's time were men, which viewed all human beings, high and low, rich and poor, as a single family, created by one almighty being for the aid, support, and protection of each other. These values broadly aligned with those of the Enlightenment period and appealed to many of its leading artistic figures, including Voltaire, Haydn, and Goethe, all of whom were Masons. But how, scholars have often wondered, did Mozart square his Freemasonry with the Catholic faith, which he continued to practice? As recently as 1738, Pope Clement XII had banned Catholics from becoming Freemasons, whose free-thinking approach to social issues and morality was seen as dangerously challenging to the church authority. For Mozart, no such clash of interest existed. Religion and politics were, in fact, taboo subjects at Masonic meetings, where the aim was to avoid the ideological wranglings and disputations of daily living and point members towards one unifying, practically useful conversations. Mozart thrived in this environment. He was, by all accounts, a regular attendee at lodge meetings and within months had ascended to the third and highest degree of Master Mason. The crowning glory of Masonic influence in Mozart's music was undoubtedly his opera, The Magic Flute, premiered 2 months before he died in 1791 in Vienna, whose tale of ritual trials on the path of enlightenment closely mirrors Masonic practice. Scholars have also traced Masonic symbolism in the music, not least in the solemn-resounding three-chord wind and brass fanfare at the heart of the overture. Yet for all his musical achievements, when Mozart died, it was his qualities as a human being that his fellow Masons remembered most. Brotherly love, a peaceful disposition, advocacy of a good cause. These were the chief characteristics of his nature. Connections matter, but a much stronger reason for Mozart's attraction to Freemasonry was the philosophy that it promoted. And in Music Research and Technology, we have this article titled, What Does Soundstage Mean? Headphone Jargon, Terms Explained. This is published in TomsGuide.com by Tammy Rogers on July 15, 2025. If you've spent any amount of time reading a review of an audio product on Tom's Guide, or any site for that matter, you've likely come across some confusing language that might not make sense. There's a lot of jargon that we audio reviewers use when we test out headphones, earbuds, and speakers, and it's often easy to forget that not everyone knows exactly what we're talking about. Soundstage, for example, is actually a really easy one. It's essentially how, quote-unquote, wide your music is. You've got to imagine that the musicians in your tracks are playing on a stage, and that the headphones or the speakers dictate the width of that stage. A restricted soundstage makes everything feel too close together and mashes together the band members. This is generally less preferable to a wider soundstage, which gives the instrumentalist more room to breathe. So whenever you read soundstage, just imagine that there is a stage in front of you. No, it's not spatial audio, which we'll get to later. Spatial imaging is about the soundscape that your headphones create, while soundstage is about the width of the music you're listening to. Spatial imaging is all about placing the instruments in the right place on that stage. Headphones and earbuds with good spatial imaging will let you point out different instruments in the sound stage. You can hear that the guitar might be to the right of the stage or the keyboard in the center. It's a great way of separating okay headphones from good models. Headphones with spatial imaging that isn't as good make it harder to point out the location of the band members, making for less immersive music. So we've seen that soundstage and spatial imaging are two terms which describe the way that your music sounds. So what about instrument separation? This one is fairly self-explanatory. It's making sure that you can pick out the various instruments with accuracy within your tracks. Some headphones might make it less obvious that there are two guitars, making the two together into something that doesn't necessarily sound bad, but doesn't give you all the information you want when you're listening. Good instrument separation allows you to really tell the different instruments apart in a piece of music. This is particularly noticeable when you're listening to classical music, when you can pick apart the different sections and find the different musicians. You'll have heard as much about spatial audio and Dolby Atmos in regards to movies as you will have about music. It's a form of surround sound, which makes the audio come from all around you. This means that a car would rush by your left side and speakers would play the sound physically in your space. The sound of your music is made up of vibrations. These are the frequencies. Different frequencies make up the different parts of your music. Higher frequencies make up the stuff that lives at the top of your music. Think cymbals and sopranos. Then you'll hear us talk about mid-range frequencies, which is where a lot of the music lives. That's guitars, tenors, and so on. Then there are the low-range frequencies. That's where the bass lives, like low synths, kick drums, and bass guitars. Sounds do go lower than that, and that's where subwoofers for soundbars come in. These are the sounds that make your room, skull, soul vibrate and shake. Reviewers use these to split sound quality. Good mids don't mean there are also good lows and vice versa.
She's turning out sugar, what did the mic do? Take him now and let me flag him my. Get me out of my bliss and now I'm feeling brand new.
BTS, the K-pop group, named Time Magazine Entertainer of the Year in 2022. Fly to My Room introduces our rock and pop music news. K-pop Demon Hunters built a soundtrack to slay global pop charts. Can we get a sequel and more great K-pop songs, please? This is written by Jim Halterman, July 16, 2025, IndieWire.com. In Netflix's original animated musical film, K-pop Demon Hunters, the trio that make up fictional K-pop band Huntrix rule the pop charts when they're not working in their true calling as Demon Hunters. Worlds collide, though, when the Saja Boys, a new competing boy band, reveal themselves to also be demons, which the girls being the only hope to take them down. But this film knows something about taking out the competition, since that's what it's been doing since it premiered on June the 20th. The news gets even better on the pop charts, since several of the singles and the soundtrack have landed in top slots. The film's executive music producer, Ion Eisendrath, admits to having a hope that the music would be just as popular as the film itself. Being on the charts, that's the dream. The film's single, Golden, is currently at number one on the Billboard Global 200 charts, and it will be submitted by Netflix for awards consideration. Another song, Your Idol, from Saja Boys, recently topped the U.S. Spotify chart, making them the highest-charting K-pop group in Spotify history, even besting K-pop supergroup BTS. Also, the film soundtrack is currently number two on the Billboard's Global 200 chart. IndieWire talked to Eisendrath about making sure the music in K-pop Demon Hunters was true to the K-pop genre. While working with different writers on the film, songs was a good thing, and his thoughts on a sequel to the animated hit film. IndieWire asked, what was your directive going into K-pop Demon Hunters as far as what the music should be and how you should capture the K-popness of it all? And Ion Eisendrath replies, the directive was very much, we want to create a soundtrack of real K-pop hits. This soundtrack needs to land and exist as a K-pop album, but also work within the film and cover the narrative territory it needs to cover and fit in the mouths of each of the characters, which is not something that K-pop traditionally does. A pop song wants to be universal. It's just continuing to focus on the story and character values. It was a real sort of organic emergence of what the songs needed to be. So how did you accomplish that? Well, first, there was so much cross-pollination, it was truly an ensemble of writers, which often happens in pop music. There are song camps where everyone gets together and collaborates, but that's not the usual process in films. And we really had, for most songs, between 3 and 7 versions of each song written for each spot in the movie. Because you had the script to work with, did that inform where you needed, for example, a ballad, or where you needed more of an upbeat pop song? Yeah, I worked closely with the directors and our producer for a year before we even started songwriting and spotting where the songs go, what needed to happen in each song. Golden is definitely the single that's really blowing up by being number one right now everywhere in the world. Ironically, Golden was the one we had the most iterations. We had 5 different writers on it and 7 different songs by the time we were done. It took a long time. It served the function of what in most film musicals is called the I Want song, which is where the characters establish the mission that they're going to be on for the rest of the film. We had to keep it as a pop song, but it also had to establish what the group wanted, which was to seal and basically conquer all. And the way to express that is to be golden. The interview skips down and ends with this. How many total songs were considered for the movie before you figured out these are the ones that actually are going to make the cut? Well, I'm going to say 30+. The way it worked was we knew we had 7 songs that we wanted in the film, and so we just kept bashing away at each of those song spots till we got there. So what's it been like for you and the singers on YouTube doing covers and even dancers doing the moves from the film's dance performances? Yeah, it's crazy. It's super exciting and validating because we were trying to create something that the Korean culture would feel like was created by them and also that they loved. So to see that, I don't think there's any greater sort of reward from doing this project. And members of BTS even did a little riff on a live stream recently. Yeah, that's unreal. That was crazy. I don't think I'm alone in being ready for K-pop Demon Hunters 2. Is that a hope that you would get to do more of these songs for another movie? I would love it. It would be a dream. I could do this forever. K-pop Demon Hunters is currently streaming on Netflix. Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's Raleigh Durham Reel introduces our local music news. It's titled North Carolina Folk Festival, Find Common Sound. This is in downtown Greensboro, September 12th through the 14th, 2025. 3 days, 5 stages, all free. Featuring on Friday, Sammy Ray and the Friends. Saturday, Arrested Development. Sunday, Steep Canyon Rangers. Over 25 other artists are listed, with special performances from NCA&T State University's Gospel Choir and Drumline and the Rock and Roll Playhouse, Music of the Grateful Dead for Kids. So go to ncfolkfestival.com for more details. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day, back in 1779, that an American composer, attorney, poet, and social worker who wrote a poem called Defense of Fort McHenry was born. The words of this poem became the lyrics to what song? Was that A, the Star-Spangled Banner, B, America the Beautiful, C, American Pie, D, Stars and Stripes Forever, or E, God Bless America? Correct answer, that would be answer A, the Star-Spangled Banner. And the American attorney, poet, and social worker born on this day in 1779, who wrote that poem is Francis Scott Key. An article in PoetryFoundations.org notes that Key is best known for his role in commemorating the War of 1812 with a poem, Defense of Fort McHenry, which was later set to the tune of a popular British drinking song and became the Star-Spangled Banner. And as noted by the U.S. National Park Service, Key's song was designated in 1931 as the national anthem of the United States. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1962 that Bob Dylan changed his name from what? Was it A, from Robert Zimmerman? B, from Bart Simpson? Was it C, Bobby Freeland? Or D, Dylan Thomas? And the correct answer is answer A. Robert Zimmerman legally changed his name to Bob Dylan on this day back in 1962. The 21-year-old reportedly changed his name to Bob Dylan to create a new persona and to distance himself from his previous identity. While he initially considered D-I-L-L-O-N before settling on D-Y-L-A-N, his name change was also influenced by his reading of D-Y-L-A-N Thomas poetry, Dylan Thomas, and a desire for a more evocative and marketable name for his musical career. Also, as noted in KSLX.com, in his book Chronicles, Dylan explained that he was inspired to change his name after he saw an article about jazz performer David Allen, spelled A-L-L-Y-N, and some poems by Dylan Thomas. An article in AmericanSongwriter.com concludes that, in essence, however, we will likely never know why he changed his name to Bob Dylan. After all, the man has never been incredibly forthright with details regarding his past. However, that is what makes Bob Dylan, Bob Dylan. So let's close out today's program with a Robert Zimmerman ballad. Here's Bob Dylan and Ballad of a Thin Man.
You've been with the professors and they've all liked your looks. With great lawyers you have discussed lepers and crooks. You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. You're very well read, it's well known. But something is happening here and you don't know what it is.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
And you say, what does this mean? And he screams back, you're a cow. Give me some milk or else go home. And you know something's happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?